We were at page 25 when we left off before. And Tom was talking about the great fact, and you notice there's that little asterisk, that little star. And at the bottom of page 25, it says, fully explained Appendix 2. And we'll see that again in the next chapter. So let's go there now. In the third edition, it's page 569. And they talk about here spiritual awakening and spiritual experience, the difference between the two. And we could pay close attention to how many times Bill uses different words to mean the same thing, specifically change. 569 in the third edition. 567 in the fourth edition. If anyone has a fifth edition, I'd like to meet you. It says the term, everyone there, by the way, we're good? You with me? Okay. It says the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. We all have our different experiences with this power, but they're experiences with the power nonetheless. Yet it is true that from our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. That's change. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming change, God consciousness, followed by at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. And that's kind of like what Bill had, that immediate, that experience right at that moment. What a lot of us have is what this is going to talk about in a moment, the educational variety over time, the spiritual awakening, the shift that occurs. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, change, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what I call, the psychologist William James calls, the educational variety, because they develop over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. You leave people when you're in the grip of the grapes, and then you show up at their doorstep to make amends, and they look at you like Bill looked at Ebby, and they know you're different. When we go back to our employers after waking up in here, or getting out of a rehab and doing some work, and we go back to the places where we caused harm, people know there's something different going on with us, and we feel like maybe there's nothing going on, yet people see it. Our deportment, as our book used earlier, shouts at people that there's something different about us. In thought, word, deed, there's a shift that happens. Usually, I know for me, people said there's something different about you. You change, you're different. And I feel like I'm still, like, you know, in the drudgery of trying to get better. I remember a great thing for me was my dad gave me the keys to his car one day and says, you know, take my car to the car wash, and then gave me money to go do some of his banking. And I'm thinking he must be really out of his mind. You know, I remember thinking, oh my God, he gave me the keys and money to take his car to a car wash and then do some banking for him. Because he saw something in me that I still didn't see yet. He saw a shift. Trust. He was able to trust me. What a good deal. He finally realized that he has undergone a profound alteration, change, in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. Excuse me. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With the few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. I was guilty of that in Alcoholics Anonymous, having contempt prior to investigation. And now I've been made wide open again, where I take things outside of AA and do along with AA, not instead of AA, because when we do that, we can 11-step ourselves right out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tom and I have a friend who got hooked on some information outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that became his God. he's drunk because he did it instead of, not along with. So we don't want to have contempt prior to investigation on any other help that we can get. But we need to know we're drunks in here and this comes first and we do things along with, not instead of. Contempt prior to investigation will keep me blocked from growing and understanding and effectiveness. And I have experienced that in Alcoholics Anonymous. As I said earlier, I became a worshiper of the methodology in this book. I worshiped this book and forgot to worship God, who is going to move me where he wants to move me. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There's a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance, and that principle is contempt prior to investigation.
During the break, a few gentlemen approached me, and basically the question was about this spiritual experience. How do I know? Another gentleman asked, how do I know there is a God? I can only share from my experience that when I went through this process, and even today, if I'm honest and thorough in the actions required in steps 4 through 9, God will show up whether I like it or not.
Bottom of page 25, last paragraph. It says, if you are seriously alcoholic as we were, and the question, consider, am I coming to terms that I'm a real alcoholic? We believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. Well, what is a middle-of-the-road solution? Middle-of-the-road solution is any information that doesn't have directions to take me to have a spirit, to having a spiritual experience. For example, don't drink and go to meetings. There's no spiritual experience in that. Take commitments at your home group. Great things may not take me to have an experience with this power. Make 90 meetings in 90 days. If I get through that, without picking up a drink, it just means I'm separated from alcohol for 90 days. And what about the women who are single parents or men who are single parents and they can't make 90 meetings in 90 days and they have to work and take care of their children and they only get to 70 meetings in 90 days? Does that mean they fail? They're going to get drunk? No. What if you're one of those people who raise hands and says, I made 300 meetings in 90 days, like you want a statue made for you? Does that mean you pass? Or you graduated? No. It just meant you're separated from alcohol. All of that are middle-of-the-road solutions. We must be here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We must be here. This is the training ground. But doesn't mean we're going to have a spiritual experience because I show up at a meeting for an hour a day, 7 days a week, or 2 or 3 meetings a day. So that's what a middle-of-the-road solution is. Any information that doesn't give me direction to take me to this power and wake up. Okay? It says when we're in a position where life, we were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we would pass into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had two alternatives. Step 1, go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other, step 2, to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. Or as my sponsor said, willing to go to any lengths to recover.
The next 3 pages talk about Roland Hazard. And this is a man that came from a pretty influential family in the northeast of the United States. And he had a lot of money. His family had a lot of money. And he ended up going out to Europe to search out this doctor. As it was shared with me, he was initially searching out Sigmund Freud, but ended up with a protege of Sigmund's, which is Dr. Jung. And so it says, a certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. For years, he had floundered from one sanitarium to another, from one rehab to another. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. Then he had gone to Europe, placing himself in the care of a celebrated physician, the psychiatrist Dr. Jung, who prescribed for him. Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. His physical and mental condition were usually good. So if I'm separated from alcohol, and we were sharing about this with another gentleman during a course of break, I'm separated from alcohol for a little while, and physically and mentally, I feel good. That's what it looks like. Well, my experience was when I was bouncing in and out, I feel good physically, and that sense of feeling good physically goes right up to my mind and tells me something that it told me so many times over and over before. I can handle it. It doesn't matter about the experience in the past. But above all, his physical experience, were unusually good. Above all, he believed he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable.
He knew his triggers. We hear that. I got to watch my triggers in AA. Right?
And I'm the power. So do you believe with a profound knowledge of the inner workings of your minds that relapse is unthinkable? It goes on to say, nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. This guy never even made it back to the boat to come back to America. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fall. So we returned to the doctor, whom he admired, and asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished, above all things, to regain control, self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems, yet he had no control whatever over alcohol. Why was this? He begged the doctor to tell him the whole truth, and he got it. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless, utterly hopeless. Has my experience shown me, based on my drinking, that I'm hopeless? He could never regain his position in society, and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. Shielding alcohol, shielding it, a geographic, go away for a while, 30-day rehab, 6 weeks, couple of months, whatever. If I'm separated from it, a period of time, I'll be all right. Well, that's not the case. It wasn't my experience, and it wasn't Roland's experience. That was a great physician's opinion. See, Dr. Jung's opinion was Dr. Silkworth, they were almost the same. You know, they felt the same way about this at first, that the condition, that the man is hopeless. But this man still lives on the bottom of page 26, and he is a free man. He does not need a bodyguard, nor is he confined. He can go anywhere on this earth where other free men go without disaster, provided he remains willing to maintain a certain simple attitude. And we're going to see that attitude on page 55 down the line in the book if you want to just mark that. Some of our alcoholic readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Can you quit forever without spiritual help? Has that been your experience up to this point? And if that be the case, maybe you ought to really take a look. Do you really need this? This is a great place. But if you're a hard drinker, don't try helping another alcoholic. Unless it's things that are coming out of this book. Let us tell you the rest of this conversation our friend had with his doctor. The doctor said, "You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you." Next line, he said to the doctor, "Is there no exception?" And the doctor says, "Yeah, there is." And this is Dr. Jung's opinion on what it takes to recover, and it's the same diagnosis that Dr. Silkworth had. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena, unexplainable. They appear to be the nature of used emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. It's really hard for me sometimes when I look back and I'm sitting down in my home and there's an alcoholic across from me and I'm trying to help him. It doesn't make any sense for a guy like me where I was coming from, because I wasn't about helping anybody. It's hard for me to understand that a guy like me can go up and do the dishes. And that's my domain, by the way. It's a, you know, I have to do it because no one in my house knows how to do the dishes right and have them clean. I play God in the kitchen. But that wasn't me. That wasn't me. In fact, I have been trying to produce some emotional rearrangements within you. With many individuals, the methods which I employed are successful, but I have never been successful with an alcoholic of your description. Again, he's saying the same thing earlier that Dr. Silkworth says. As a real alcoholic, doctors can't help me. I must have something. I must have this thing called spiritual experience.
It says here, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. Isn't it interesting, if you go back to your own home group, that it's still once in a while alcoholics are having these vital spiritual experiences, and shouldn't it be all of us going home and being on fire? I mean, sometimes we leave our meetings and it's like we need another meeting because the last one was just like, fill in the blank. Yet what the information we have here in this book, it shouldn't be once in a while still. It should be almost everyone who walks through the doors are catching fire, waking up, are having these vital spiritual experiences and going out and getting new recruits and bringing them in here. And this should be like a pep rally. We should be excited about what's going on here. I know I am. And what's going on in Staten Island, I feel blessed to be a part of, to be right in the middle of it, what's going on there. One drunk working with another at a group in Staten Island called the Way Out Group. You'll see it going on all the time. People are waking up. You see it happening. How come that's not happening more often? How come we go to meetings and talk about our issues and waste time at a meeting while people are dying in the back because they're afraid to raise their hand because they're new and they're saying, this is what alcoholics is about? Talking about my bad day at work because my boss gave me a hard time. I didn't make overtime. Or the dog, you know, did his business on the rug. Or my cat died. Or my wife's giving me a hard time. Go to a therapist with that stuff. Talk to your sponsor on the phone about that. We ought to be in here talking about this spiritual experience and being excited about it and telling new people how to get there and how to get free. And not telling alcoholics it's okay to think about a drink because you're an alcoholic. That's a lie that shortchanges God in his book and everything we stand for in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not okay to think about a drink if you're in here a while. You're doing something wrong. And you guys are clapping, three just walked out. But we ought to be excited about this, and we have a responsibility here. And Tom just referred to something that made me think, bless them. You get the non-alcoholic or the moderate hard drinker. Sponsoring a real alcoholic, you know what happens to the real alcoholic? They usually stay sick or get drunk and don't come back. You need a real alcoholic. Is your sponsor a real alcoholic? Because if I'm a hard drinker or a moderate drinker in Alcoholics Anonymous because some counselor in a rehab said, go to AA, where I should just be sitting with a therapist, right? Or maybe going back to my religious group. But I'm a hard drinker, a moderate drinker, sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then the real alcoholic shows up at my door, and I tell him, don't drink and go to meetings, because that works for me. That's my solution. I can pull that off. I still have choice. And then I tell that guy, you have choice. Just don't think about a drink today. Join the sober softball team. Do AA activities. Make coffee. Then he drinks or she drinks and, God forbid, dies. And you know what the moderate and the hard drinker and the fellowship says? Well, they didn't want it enough. Well, for Christ's sake, they're in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Something wants them to get better. The Spirit's screaming for help. They're here. But you get the hard or moderate drink in Alcoholics Anonymous sponsoring the real alcoholic and people die. Now, if you're a real alcoholic and you're hanging around, shame on you, because people are dying and they ought to be hearing what you have to say after you wake up. This is a huge responsibility we have. Sponsorship, we use it all the time. Get a sponsor, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. Back home you hear a sponsor needs it. Get us someone who has a year or more sobriety to be your sponsor. What a lie. Where did that come from? Ebby showed up at Bill's, though, with 2 months sober. Bill showed up at Bob's house with about 6 months sober. Where in my book does it say you need a year sobriety in order to sponsor someone? Separate it from alcohol, take this work, wake up, and go get busy. But some of us hang around here for years and talk about the same stuff. It's normal to think about a drink if you're an alcoholic. I'm doing it for 20 goddamn years. I came in here, thank the good Lord, for people in Minnesota who were not necessarily in the friend-making business. They were in the life-saving business, and they pissed me off. They gave me truth. I was just sharing with a young lady here. The truth is not always pleasant to hear. If it feels good, it doesn't mean it's good. And if it feels bad, it doesn't mean it's bad. Waking up is not pleasant. We have a responsibility here to pass this message on. One drunk to another. Bob said it best about Bill. He spoke my language. And he showed up with information. Bob said 15 minutes, 5 hours later. I showed up at this gentleman, Vince D., his office in Manhattan. And I thought he was a clerk from my union. And he turned around in his chair and he says, I'm an alcoholic. And in about 10 minutes, he told me his story and he had me. He threw the bait out. I took it. And I would do anything this guy told me in order to recover. One drunk, work with another. And I was convinced he was a real alcoholic because I know I was. That's what we do here. And if we're not, the question to consider is, then what am I doing here?
We place a lot of emphasis, as Peter was talking about feelings. Okay? My friend Joseph shares it so well. You know, I drank when I felt good. And I drank when I felt bad. So what does drinking, what does feelings have anything to do with booze and how it's going to kill me? If I'm willing and honest enough to try, there's a simple, understandable way for me to form a relationship with this God. One that I'll be able to feel and see. And there's a way that faith can be acquired that will be through these steps, where I can go from belief. I looked at that shade, and I always wanted to believe that I'm missing something, and I know it's there, I just don't know how to get there. And it was in front of me all the time, but with this sick mind, I needed someone that was awake to show me. I needed a real alcoholic to show me. I needed to see how that man, I knew he was just like me, but he wasn't anymore. And how did you do that? I needed to see that. And he sat me and he invited me into his home. And he showed me. And he gave me some simple rules to follow.
Page 30, chapter 3. More about alcoholism. So if you didn't get it now, we're going to tell you more about it. A few words we want to pay attention to here is illusion, which is outside of me. When a magician performs a magic trick, that's an illusion. Okay. The word they use here also is delusion. That's what's going on in my mind. We'll look at words like concede, the word smash, some very key words that play an important part in our reading here. It says, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. Again, they separate us from the other drinkers. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally, allergy and obsession, different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. Can you identify up until this point? I have two kid brothers who get fired up every so often. I have family members who get fired up on the holidays. A lot of my friends would drink without impunity, right? Just drink and get fired up and show up for the next day at work or for their family. And I was going to prove I was going to be able to drink like them. That itself is a problem. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. Normal drinkers don't have this obsession in the mind that I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking like everyone else. They drink, get drunk, they don't drink, they go home. We're in a state of obsession that tonight I'm going to do it. I'll have a drink an hour. I'll drink after 12. I'll switch from scotch to brandy. Civilians don't do that. The persistence of this illusion, a lie, delusion and illusion, we can substitute it for the word lie, okay? The persistence of this lie is astonishing. Many pursue this what? This lie into the gates of insanity or death. Doctor's opinion talked about us making the supreme sacrifice. We die. We learn that we have to fully concede, to submit under pressure. And that is a spiritual thing when we do that. When we concede to our innermost self deep down in here, that's a spiritual thing when that happens. When there's that shift that happens that we know what we are. It doesn't mean we're going to recover, but it's a spiritual thing when it happens, when we fully concede to our innermost self deep down in here that I'm an alcoholic. For some of us, that takes many, many years to finally wake up to at least that. It says this is the first step in recovery. The delusion or the lie that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. While drinking and while sober, we are not like other people. Because while we're sober, we still have no defense against the first drunk. We still need to, while sober, do some spiritual disciplines while we're in here. It's kind of like we come into Alcoholics Anonymous separated from alcohol and we think the deal is done. It's just begun. It's if someone was to take a bullet in their leg and they go to a hospital, the doctor pulls the bullet out, mends you up, and you recover in the hospital for 2 weeks and you come home. When you get home, you're not bulletproof. Make sense? You with me? So we go to rehab and they detox us. And then we come to AA. We're not alcohol proof. There's certain things we need to do. Not only to stay separated, but to wake up and be free.
The delusion that I'm like other people, or presently maybe today, has to be smashed. I'm separated from alcohol. I was separated from alcohol for a long time. You know what you did? You just took my solution away from me. You just took the only thing that made me feel normal on this planet away from me. Because you didn't give me anything in return. Don't drink and go to meetings has no depth and weight for me. Because I think I'm like other people now just because I'm separated from alcohol is a lie. Because I can't handle resentments like that. Someone pisses me off, I want to go after them with a bat. Normal people don't think like me. I can't experience fear like other people. I can't accept, I'm not like other people. People can experience a little bit of misery, unhappiness. They can experience, you know, excitement and this upheaval of emotion that I experience when things aren't going my way, when separated from alcohol. And things aren't going my way and I must do something. Well, the thing I'm going to go do is go back to the only thing that's going to kill me. It's not going to kill people that aren't alcoholics. Go ahead.
Next paragraph says, we alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. And we're going to switch words here, power, choice, and control. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to have control over our drinking, power over our drinking, choice over our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers choice, power, or control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining power, choice, and control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less power, choice, and control, which led us to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type, they separate us again, are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who lost their legs, they never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind, again they separate us, like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Next paragraph, it says, despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they're in that class because we suffer from delusion. I'm not that bad. It'll be different this time. I'm not like those other people. I walked into my first AA meeting coming out of rehab. I went to my first AA meeting drunk. And I listened to people share and I said, I'm normal, they're nuts, and time for me to go home. And then I showed up at that same group a bunch of years later begging them to help me because I was just like them. The delusion of who I was removed and I stood in truth. It says, by every form of self-deception, lie, and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who's showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like gentlemen, guess what? Great. We tip our hats to you. It says, heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people, but we're here this morning, so apparently that didn't work, right? It talks about in this page the methods we have tried. One of the assignments my sponsor had given me the first time going through this work, he says, list the ways you tried to control your drinking and the consequences of it. And I would list the ways I even tried to stop and moderate control. And I would write down maybe 30 or 40 things on this piece of paper. The end result was I always wound up drunk. I always wound up on another binge. Stop, moderate, control never worked. It was girlfriend, money, job, going to the gym, running, physical exercise, things like that. Got drunk. And once I got drunk, all the reasons that I was going to use to stop drinking were pushed aside. They weren't even part of my life anymore.
On page 32, in the middle of the page, through this chapter, we're going to tell some stories about different types of alcoholics. And this first guy, he was about 30 years of age, and he was doing some spree drinking, and he decided to stay sober. He just made the decision to stay sober and did this for 25 years. I did it for nearly 10 years. I don't know what kind of situation this guy's mind was in, but I know what kind of situation my mind was in after nearly 10 years. I was nuts. A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking. He was very nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. He was ambitious to succeed in business, but saw that he could get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. An exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55. After a successful and happy business career. Then he fell victim to a belief, which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Do I believe today that a long period of sobriety and discipline would qualify me to drink as other men today? Can I handle it? Am I going to buy that lie? Maybe I have to. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking, control drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital in the meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. The progressiveness of his disease, again. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. I go to meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get back into Brooklyn, where I was born and raised, and where I attended a lot of meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous. About a year or so ago, I shared at a friend's anniversary, and I looked out into the room, and there were about 100 people out there. This was a year ago. Now, I remember when I went to that same group about 20 years ago. I could count on one hand the number of people there that were there 20 years ago. Where'd they go? This case is a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remain sober for a long stretch, we could drink thereafter drink normally. But here is a man who at 55 found he was just where he had left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. But I must find that truth. Commencing a drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must, circle must, be no reservations of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday I'll be immune to alcohol. This is asking someone to feel things that will be different, as if I can regain control.
Go over to page 34. Second paragraph. With me? For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. Well, the question to consider is, am I looking to stop altogether? Which is a nice way of saying forever. I'll sit with people and say, and tell them, point blank, you never have to pick up a drink again, ever. And they look at you like a deer in the headlights, like this. And some old-timers get really pissed off when you say things like that.
One day at a time.
One day at a time, I'm never going to drink again. You know, watch the clock tick. Never have to drink again, ever. Dr. Bob said to a prospect, you quit for good and all, forever, provided we follow some simple rules. It says, we are assuming, of course, that the reader, that's me, desires to stop, and I do. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. Well, if I'm still having choice, maybe I'm not a real alcoholic. See, so I cannot drink, go to meetings, and do 90 meetings in 90 days and go about my life. But if I'm the person who has no power, choice, or control, the real alcoholic, especially the type 4 alcoholic, well, then I need a spiritual basis of life, don't I? And I need a spiritual experience. Most of us felt we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish or the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. Go over to page 35. We're going to talk about this guy, Jim. And for lack of a better term, we'll call Jim a low bottom. Okay? As we read his story, I want you to pay attention to the setup of alcoholism and then the ambush is exactly how what happens to this guy. It says our first example is a friend we should call Jim. Jim has a charming family, a wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. Jim's a big deal. He had a commendable World War record. He's a good salesman. Everybody likes this guy. He's an intelligent man. It's normal so far as we can see, except for something called a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated, he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum or the rehab or treatment center, he came into contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism.
Step 1.
And the answer we had found.
Step 2.
He made a beginning.
Step 3.
His family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he lost through drinking. So his family's reassembled, so his external conditions got better quickly. And he used that as a judgment as to what he had to do. He did 3 steps and stopped. It also says that he began to work for a salesman for the business he lost through drinking. So he owned this place, was a big deal. Because of his drinking, he loses it. Now he's working for the place that he owned. He's not too happy with this, as we'll see. It says, all went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. He never took 4 through 9. To his consternation, he found himself drunk 6 times in rapid succession. Spree remorse, spree remorse, spree remorse, over and over and over again, working for a place that he was the owner. He is not in good spiritual condition. He's getting drunk over and over and over again. Okay? It says, on each of these occasions, we work with him. Every time this guy came back from a drunk, AA sat and worked with this guy again. Most times you see a guy come in here for the 3rd, 4th, 5th time and say, forget it, he's lost. We see that sometimes. These guys sat and worked with this guy, Jim, over and over and over again.
It's none of my business how many times
right.
A man is coming back.
On each of these occasions, we worked with him reviewing carefully what had happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic. He took step 1. He knew about that. He conceded and in serious condition. And he knew he faced another trip to the rehab if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family for whom he had deep affection. So here's a guy who's coming off 6 drunks, right? And they're working with him. So what happens? He gets drunk again. They ask him what happened. He said, I came to work on Tuesday morning, and I heard 2 gentlemen share this with me for the first time. He came to work on Tuesday. The question he asked, where was this guy on Monday? Right? If he's a drunk, your guess is as good as mine. Right? I came to work on Tuesday. He says, I felt irritated. I had a resentment that I had to be a salesman for this business that I once owned. He had a few words with the boss. The boss probably said, hey, Jim, where were you yesterday? But nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. So far, so good. For a civilian, for a social drinker, for a moderate drinker. He's in a resentment. He's coming off six drunks, and he's going to the country to see a prospect for a car. He's a salesman. I'm going to go do business. This is the setup. Watch the ambush. He's on the way. I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. Now, if you're in good spiritual condition, you would say, well, there's a bar there. There's also a restaurant. I can go and have dinner, meet some friends, and I'm on my way out of there. Or someone out there can say, there's a bar there. I don't feel like drinking. I'm going to do some business and go home. Or maybe I'll have one or two. Here's a guy, again, I repeat, is coming off six drunks and is in a place of resentment. His mind's saying, we're going to go to this bar, go to this place, this roadside place, where they have a bar on the side. I'm going to have some lunch and meet some customers. Set up. I would get out of rehab and go back to the old neighborhood to see the guys, what they were doing, and to show off how good I looked coming out of rehab. Got drunk, never made it home. At the moment, my mind was not telling me that. My mind, the delusional mind, was saying, we'll go down to the corner. We look great. I just spent 9 weeks in rehab. I'm going to show everybody how buffed I am. Got some new clothes on. I even brushed my hair. I'm going to show everybody. Never made it home. My mind didn't tell me that. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going it for years, and I'm willing to bet, LA odds from here to Vegas, he got drunk there too. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk, still no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk, squiggly writing the word suddenly, and suddenly is the illness, which is loud. Vaguely, what we're going to read is the spirit, which is soft. What does he listen to? Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. You see the ambush happening now? I ordered whiskey and poured it into milk. I vaguely, remember page 24, hazy and readily supplanted? This is what's going on. I vaguely sensed that I was not being too smart, but felt reassured that I was taking whiskey on a full stomach. That's the lie. The experiment went so well, I ordered another whiskey and poured into more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another.
See, suddenly is my insanity. It's my insanity. And that shows up. I'm not sure if many people can identify with that here, but when that shows up, and alcohol and what it can do for me, okay, and the effect that's produced by it to take me to that place of ease and comfort, that's sudden. And that's the obsession. And that's the idea that outweighs all other ideas. Because as I'm doing it, after bouncing in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I go back, I can handle it, but see, the sanity comes vaguely, as Peter was talking about. It's just, yeah, I knew this is wrong, but I have this obsession I'm dealing with, and I have no control or choice over it, and that's outweighing everything else. I must drink.
When we're awake spiritually, this stuff is no longer part of our life. We go do business, we have good reason for being there, and we go home. There's no thought about drinking. Bar or no bar. Party or no party, we don't drink. It's the problem has been solved. Step 10 says it's been removed. I've been to many occasions where there was lots of drinking going on. I go, do my business, and then I go home. And I don't have to call my sponsor 45 times on a night. You know, I don't have to take a quarter for a phone call. I have to walk with my big book under my arm at a wedding or a business occasion. Spiritually fit, I can go anywhere if I have good reason for being there. I'm trying to steal a little vicarious pleasure, maybe doing things I'm not supposed to be doing. Well, probably I'm not spiritually fit, so chances are I'm going to have a white-knuckle night.
I can't recall in the 20 years that I was bouncing in and out. I don't know about your experiences, but I can't recall an experience when I was in that obsession that I called my sponsor. Mm-hmm.
So what happens to Jim? It says, thus started one more journey to the treatment center for Jim. Here was the threat of commitment, the loss of family and position. Father emotional appeal seldom suffices, remember that. To say nothing of the intense mental and physical suffering which drinking always caused him. He had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if he only mixed it with milk. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. Step two says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. If we have to be restored to sanity, it must mean we're insane.
In step one.
And it isn't the things, the insanity isn't the things we do after we pick up a drink. It's what precedes the first drink. This sort of thinking, that it will be different this time. I can handle it like other people. We buy the lie, and at the end, the truth will kill us.
And I hear an awful lot of people talking about suggesting to other people in Alcoholics Anonymous, oh, read page 449. Well, that's in the English version, that's acceptance. When you first come in here. Well, my living in step one, when I first show up in Alcoholics Anonymous or any other man that is a real alcoholic and is trying to get well, step one is unacceptable. It's unacceptable for me to live that like that. And I lived like that for 20 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to get out of step one quickly.
And there better be a step two waiting for me. Page 37, next paragraph, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sentences down, it says, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. Go over to page 38. And there's just one little piece of information before we get into Fred. If we go down to the second paragraph, 4 sentences down, it says, however intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol has been involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, but isn't it true? And if we think about every time we went back to picking up a drink, what was the thinking like? Strangely insane, based on where it always took us to. Page 39. First paragraph says, that may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at present time, are unable to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours. But the actual potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is a point we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize to smash home upon our alcoholic readers as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. These are people talking about this, not from reading a book, but from their own experiences. Last night I shared, I won't talk to anything about I don't have an experience with.
I work with a number of alcoholics and have done so in the past. And when I'm taking them on this journey through this book, and they get steps 1, 2, and 3, and they get an abundant sense of knowledge about themselves. And then we get into inventory. And then I sometimes don't see them anymore. Action. Actions against my will. Actions against my will.
Talk about this guy, Fred, in the next paragraph. Well-known, he works for a well-known accounting firm. His income is good. He's a fine home, happily married guy, promising children of college age. He has attractive personality, makes friends with everyone. If there ever was a successful businessman, it is Fred. To all appearances, he's a stable, well-balanced individual, yet he's alcoholic. It says, we first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. It was his first experience of this kind. He was much ashamed of it. But it says, far from admitting he was alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital just to rest his nerves. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. What does he do? He says he made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so, in spite of his character and standing. Fred wouldn't even take step one. wouldn't even concede, wouldn't even surrender, wouldn't even come to that place of admission. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic. So if he wouldn't, if he couldn't concede to his innermost self he's an alcoholic and couldn't admit that in step one, how could he do step two? It says Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. It says we told him what we knew of alcoholism.
Step one.
He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but was a long way from admitting he could do nothing about it himself. Next paragraph says, we didn't hear from Fred for a while. And then one day we were told that he was back in the rehab, the hospital. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story he told was most instructive, for here was a chap absolutely convinced he could not stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all other concerns, but was flat on his back nevertheless.
Let him tell you about it. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first drink, but I was confident it could not happen to me after what I had learned. See, Fred had the self-knowledge. He was the power. He was going to check it out. I reasoned that I was not so far advanced as most of you fellows, that I had been usually successful in licking my other personal problems, and that I would therefore be successful where you men had failed. I felt I had every right to be self-confident, that it would be the only a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. In this frame of mind, I went about my business, and for a time, all was well. Fear sobered him a bit. I had no trouble refusing drinks and began to wonder if I had been making too hard work of a simple matter. Physically, he started to get better. Mentally, now it's starting to shift. Starting to shift, the progression of his mind. See, just being sober never kept me sober. One day I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. He felt great. Now watch Fred's progression of insanity. I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought, the obsession, came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. And that idea started to outweigh other ideas. That was all, nothing more. I ordered a cocktail in my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. The phenomenon of craving set in. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. He's going to act human. He's going to walk down the block for a little while. Oh, I'm okay. I'm normal. I can handle this. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me a highball would be fine before going to bed. So I stepped into the bar and had one. The phenomenon of craving has already taken place. His body is saying more. He thinks he has a choice in this. He thinks he's involved in the thinking. He's not. His body is just saying more. I remember having several more that night and plenty next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being in an airplane bound for New York and finding a friendly taxi cab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me. He found a drinking buddy. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said and did. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went over that evening carefully. Very important. Because, you see, Bill and Bob, let's say that those were the two people that were helping this man, they were going over with Fred and wanted him to see that, exactly what happened to him. It's very important for the alcoholic that just comes off of a slip to show him exactly what happened, that obsession. How his mind worked. I now remembered as I soon regained, I went over. Not only I had been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. Why not? My body is saying more. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way to some trivial excuse of having a drink.
We're talking about the thinking mind here, how dangerous it is. I just want to share something with you from a book called The Power of Now. It says most humans are in the grip of the egoic mode of consciousness, identified with their mind and run by their mind. If they do not free themselves from their mind in time, they will be destroyed by it. They will experience increasing confusion, conflict, violence, illness, despair, madness. Egoic mind has become like a sinking ship. If you don't get off, you will go down with it. The collective egoic mind is the most dangerously insane and destructive entity ever to inhabit this planet. What do you think will happen on this planet if the human consciousness remains unchanged? What do I think will happen to me if I don't continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness? What will happen to me if I continue to be identified with my mind and listen to what my mind is telling me, which is fueled by my ego, which is fueled by different manifestations of self? The only alternative is to continue to wake up and grow in understanding and effectiveness. But here's Fred, and like most of us, when the mind drives us, we're always in fear, we're always in self, and we do whatever it tells us to do, and it's always wrong. It's always dangerous and insane thinking. An awakened person is unattached to that stuff. I've experienced that. That's why we can walk into a place where liquor is being served and be free. Because the spirit is what's driving us, not the mind. They meet Fred, and they sit down with him. Page 42. And what do they do with Fred? They don't ask him, let's talk about your feelings, Fred. What were your triggers? Let's talk about your issues. They get busy immediately. And in the second paragraph, it says, they outlined the spiritual answer and program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully. It says, though I had been a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow. But the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant that I would have to throw out several lifelong conceptions. He had to drop old ideas here out the window. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, I had the curious feeling that my alcohol condition was relieved, as in fact it proved to be. It says quite important was the discovery that spiritual principle would solve all, I like it to circle the word, all my problems. Spiritual principles would solve all my problems. We turn all things into the Father of Light, Bill wrote, who presides over us all. I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. Bottom of page 43, which is really a summary of 23 to 43. It says, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. It doesn't say while we're on a drunk, before the first drink. We have no effective mental defense before the next drunk. What I was sharing earlier, we have no input into the decision that's made for us by this thing called alcoholism when we're going to drink. We can't stop the drunk. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense, our defense, my defense must come from God, from a higher power.
Then how can I depend upon a group of people? It's good in the beginning. But within that group of people, I better find a real alcoholic, if I'm a real alcoholic, to show me how to get well.
Chapter 4, We Agnostics. In this chapter, by the way, they're going to tell us how to find a higher power, where to find a higher power, and even why we ought to find a higher power. We're going to be looking at that. We're going to be looking at current unmanageability on page 52 in the manifestations itself. More unmanageability on page 52. And what is the solution to it? Okay? It says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. Boy, I hope we did. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. It's a question to sit with. Or if when drinking, you have little control of the amount you take, question to sit with. You are probably alcoholic. If this be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible, but to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, as I was. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or find God are not easy alternatives to face. We know we're drinking and we're going to die, and you tell me I have to find God? Those are not easy alternatives to face, because my contemporary investigation was, okay, you talk about God, that means I have to go join a monastery somewhere, become a religious leader or a cult figure, or go, you know, meditate 20 hours a day or things like that. That's not what they're talking about. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. And for me, or else meant step one again, going back to that again, living that again. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we're atheists, agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life was sufficient, I could have recovered a long time ago. But it didn't work, did it? But we found that such codes and philosophy did not save us. And the key word here is save, because they may have worked for a short time. Different codes, different philosophies, trying different things may have gotten a certain relief or maybe a break from the drink, but it wasn't enough to keep us stopped. Temporary relief. It didn't save us. No matter how much I tried. We could wish to be more. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. And here is some very, very important information. What my problem is here is lack of power. Not only with alcoholism, but everything. Lack of power, that was my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live. And it had to be a power greater than myself. Obviously, but where and how was I to find this power? It says that's what this book is about. Its main object, the main object of this book, is to help you, to enable you to find the power that will solve your problem. This book, the information in this book, will take you to a God which will solve your problem. What a great promise.
As Peter was talking about, it's my mind, my thought, in that sick condition. See, my physical, mental, and spiritual aspects of the disease in step one is unacceptable. And that unmanageability, it prevents me. It's like I have a sick mind. For years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a sick mind, and I'm trying to fix me with this sick mind. I needed someone awake to show me. I can't fix me. I'm not the power. I need a power greater than myself. And maybe for a little bit, it's what appears to be this man that's helping me. But all he is, he's a pointer. He's going to show me. He's going to get me to a power greater than myself.
Same paragraph. It says, many times we talk, a few sentences down. It says, many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss our alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Skip over to page 46. So what are we going to do about that? Page 46, first paragraph. Second sentence. It says, let us make haste to reassure you. This is how. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, walked us through the lay aside prayer. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, old conception, old ideas or belief systems, and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. With a spirit of willingness is how this experience begins. We commenced to get results, it says, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power which is God.
See, but for years, that's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I want to define this. I want to put God in a box. Just like I put everything else in a box. This is the way it's supposed to be. But the fact of the matter was, I was God. I was playing God. I needed to find a power outside of me.
Much to our relief, we discover we do not need to consider another's conception of God. Very important, very promising here. Our own conception, whatever it may be at this point, right? However inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect the contact with him. So you may be sitting there saying, well, I don't believe as that person believes. They seem to be on a path and I'm just starting out. Are you willing, yes or no, and that's sufficient to make the approach? No matter how inadequate you may feel about your idea or conception about this power. No judgments, no scale. Willing, yes or no. I am. I have certain conceptions. Group of drunks, G-O-D. Good orderly direction, G-O-D. Good enough. Are you willing, yes or no? That's what our book promises. That's the great hope this book offers. God will move you where he needs to move you. We show up with a mustard seed of willingness. It says, as soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, God, a spirit of universe, God, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms to those who seek him. I live life on God's terms today. Not life on life's terms. I fail miserably living life on life's terms. It's according to my script and my rules. I can never pull that off. Life on God's terms, simple and easy. He doesn't make too hot terms for me or you. To us, the realm of the Spirit God is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. I sat with a guy working with him in this chapter. He had major problems with God. And I read him this, and I broke this down for him. And this guy sat across the table from me and started to weep because he thought he never had to shut Alcoholics Anonymous because he thought he had to believe like some of his religious leaders. And he could never do that. And when I read this to him, the first time he ever saw it, he fell apart in front of me. And for the first time, he had hope that he can maybe get sober because of his own. He had little conceptions, and it was really a group of drunks, good orderly direction. AA was his God. And I said, that's with you forever. That's good enough. This power and the unity of this fellowship alone. Chances are we follow directions, we'll be taken to a God, as Tom says, whether we like it or not. Therefore, when we speak to you of God, we mean, again, they tell us, your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. Ask questions about this. Ask questions about this God. Ask questions about this experience. We ask questions. We learn. We find out. We don't go blindly into something. Because someone says something, we listen and we go do it. That's what happened at 9/11. Told, go, destroy. We don't do that. We listen. We ask questions. We sit. We reflect. Don't let prejudice or old belief systems stop you from asking your sponsor, what does this mean? I still believe this way. You're telling me to believe another way. Why? That's what we do. We ask questions. There's great learning and experience in asking questions. I should never put on blinders and go into something. I ask. If it's God, it's good anyway.
And don't make the assumption. Just don't make assumptions. Because I've always done that. Like, I know. See, I'm God, you know. I know all things. And I just make assumptions. Oh, yeah, that's it. No, if something is, but I have to be awake to that. I have to be awake if there's some doubt during the course of a meeting. You know, to go up and ask. Help.
It says, at the start, this is all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to begin, to affect our first conscious relation with God, as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. There's a couple of considerations here. We needed to ask ourselves one question. Do I now believe, or am willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? My sponsor asked me that, and I had to sit and think about that. As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is he willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us. They've had experience with this. That upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. A cornerstone. We're building here an archway that they're going to talk about later on. This archway where we're going to pass through free. And this is the cornerstone that they're talking about. That was great news to us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes. Page 48. here's what will move me to find a solution. If we go down seven sentences, right in the middle, it says, faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. So let me always be grateful for the bottom I hit, as painful and as horrific it was, because it moved me to seeking a solution as soon as possible. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness.
When I hit a bottom, I hit a bottom. I didn't feel good. But then I hit another bottom when the man was across from me and he shared with me exactly the insanity of the physical, mental, and spiritual aspects of this disease. Okay. And my second step was that there better be a God. Because I didn't know. As I mentioned last night, I was suffering from part of a disease I didn't even know I had. And I knew there was no way out for me. So whatever power this is, it better be there. Page 48. Let's look. Page 49. Let's just go to page 49. In the middle of that paragraph, it says, instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, instead of spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists chose to believe that our own human intelligence was the last word, the alpha and the omega, the beginning and end of the all, end of all, rather vain of us. So in the past, you know, like have I chosen to believe that my human intelligence was the last word? This can't work for me. Can't work for me. That agnosticism, you know, shows up. I knew that there was a God that, you know, from my childhood, but I just didn't think that he was going to work for me. I just couldn't buy that. And then this man just shared, and I looked at him, and he was a lot like me, but he wasn't anymore. So I got glimmers of hope, and I was surrounded by a bunch of other people like him. It was important to be with people that are on this path. Here it talks about laying aside prejudice. We who have traveled this dubious path beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths, have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conceptions whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices when we might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. Just before coming up here, during the break, I was talking to Jakob, and he was talking to me about how people perceive him, okay, not really having... You know, this world, I mean, we're in a lot of danger in this world. I don't know why, you know, Jakob's saying, but I experience it's going to be okay. Yeah, we live in danger. I must get to this place of ease and comfort. I must get to this place of ease and comfort. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes, top of page 50, I'm sorry, and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and beauty of the trees because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. I must give this a fair hearing. So I use a prayer and lay aside everything that I think I know.
Page 51, I'd like to take a look at. This tells us why, something we can bring currently also. Page 51, three sentences down, it says, leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. Let's put the drink aside. How's my living currently? And they're going to introduce us into page. They're going to bring us to page 52 in a second. But leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. How am I doing separated from alcohol? It says they show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Let's go over to page 52. And we'll look at our bedevilments. The word bedevilments are things that frustrate, torment, harass us. All manifestations itself, of self. Middle of page 52, second paragraph. We're going to take statements and turn them into questions. Second paragraph, three sentences down. Are we here currently? We were having trouble with personal relationships. Am I? We couldn't control our emotional natures. How am I doing with that? We were prey to misery and depression. Do I experience that? We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight or play on the internet? Of course it was. So, am I experiencing any of this stuff, and what is the solution to it? We'll take on any kind of new information to improve our current condition. A simple thing like, what do you call it? The telephone. A cell phone. Before I got a cell phone, I would go to a payphone. Most of them in New York don't work, or they're dirty. And in the rain, who wants to get out of your car to make a phone call? And then my brother said, why don't you get a cell phone? It would make your life a whole lot easier. And I said, great idea, and there was no thought about it. I switched for something that worked. Something no longer was working, I switched. It was an easy shift for me, right? But yet when it comes to something like what's killing us, we have to debate if we're going to turn it to God or not. Remote control on the TV, when I was a kid, we never had one. You had to get up, walk across the living room, turn the TV, sit back down, and then they came out with remote controls, and you got one. And you sit on your couch, and you flip the channels. So much easier, right? Telephones. Could you imagine, like, if you didn't have a telephone, you're still banging on a drum to reach, you know, Enoch to find out when the next meeting is. But you get a telephone, you pick up the phone, you say, hello, how are you? It's me. Simple, right? Sounds crazy, but isn't it simple? We change things for new. That works. Anyone who's, you know, an expert with computers, there's always new things coming out, better than what was out before. There's no thought about it. This will work, make my life easier, give it to me. When it comes to combating alcoholism or the different manifestations of self, what do? We sit and debate. I don't know if I want to give this to God. I may die. Right? And the sponsor's saying, hey, do this inventory, work with these disciplines, work with others, and we debate. I'm experiencing what we just read here, and it's killing me, and I'm bondage of self, and I'm still going to sit and debate about it. And yet what they're telling me is, with that same readiness to change something old for something new that works and makes my life easier, why would I not apply the same principle to this? Because it is about life and death. And it doesn't mean we have to be a roaring success out of the starting gate, but I'm willing to change to be made better, to wake up, to be reborn again. Simple, not easy. A book, again, says we turn all things into the Father of life besides our soul. My current conditions is I'm in the job market. I was working for a few years, downsizing, I'm in the job market. Not pleasant. 6 months in the job market. One thing I found out is when you're not working, the bills keep coming. The bank still wants their money. They don't say, well, Pete's unemployed right now, so we'll hold up. In fact, we'll send him money. You know, they don't do that. Looking for work is not always pleasant. Getting rejected is not pleasant. Going through a divorce is not always pleasant. Selling your house and looking for a new place to live is not always pleasant. Those are some of the things I've encountered over the last year. I'm starting to see a whole lot of light at the end of the tunnel. I'm grateful for all that's going on. And I experience fear. I've experienced not being of real help to other people. I was consumed by some other things. I was a prey to misery and depression. I didn't ask for that. I was working with disciplines, but my external conditions were caving in on me. There was only one place for me to go to, and that was back to God. And I walked through this whole thing with dignity because of what God has given me, and with a lot of self-respect going through, if anything, but I experienced some of this stuff. I'm on the other side of that now, and I'm just so grateful, as I shared last night, for my life as it is. I love my life with all of that other stuff going on. When you're unemployed, the bills keep coming, and finances seem to disappear a little bit. And you start to get on like this place of, I'm fearful of what's going to happen. I'm very grateful. I'm loving my life right now because I know God's going to take me to a better place. I'm convinced of that because he's done it before. And there have been some wonderful people in my life now that I never would have experienced if it wasn't for these things that have happened to me. My sight can only see to the end of this room. God can see all the way across the town. So I'm looking, oh my God, look what's up in front of me. And God's saying, not to worry, because what's beyond that is great. So I need to remember things like that and experience some of that stuff.